Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to talk about our work. So this was work done with Marcus Reitz. He was a visitor at BI in 2019, and Achim Kempf, who probably most people know. And recently it got accepted to PRL, but you can find it on for now you can only find it on archive. So usually I think when Achim gives this talk, he gives a motivation, but I'm just going to jump into the math and then we can talk about the motivation in the outlook part of the talk. So the first thing, or let's first mention the results. So if I don't have enough time, so that at least we know the results. Okay. Results. So we were able to calculate the dimension and volume of emergent spacetimes and it turns out, so I will tell you the math of it later, it turns out that these depend on gravity. Boson pull and fermion push. So we'll see later what that means. And moreover, we find that there can be a dependence of the dimension on energy scale because the mass spectrum of the fields that we have in our model can be non-trivial, meaning that not all masses are the same. So there can be an energy dependent spacetime dimension. Okay, so that's just, okay, and one more important thing is that there's a consistency check that we did for our model, which might seem unusual at first, and the consistency check consistency turned out to be okay. So we'll see what that means later. Okay, so we'll start with a formula that is not that well known. We call it the Hawking-Gilkey formula. So it appears in a paper by Hawking from 1978 in Physical Review D, where he cites Gilkey. And this formula tells us something about the Laplacian operator on Riemannian manifolds. And what it tells us is the number of eigenvalues smaller than some UV cutoff lambda on that for the Laplacian operator on that manifold, and it expresses it as some kind of a gravity action. So for details, this is the action. Okay, so we have a cosmological constant, we have the Ricci scalar, and then we have higher order curvature. So this is that formula that's not that well known. And yes?
Euclidean signature.
Sorry?
This is on Euclidean signature.
Yes, this is Euclidean signature.
And so that doesn't assume the limit of large lambda or something? Any assumptions about that?
I don't know the details of that. There is an assumption of UV cutoff.
It should be large.
Yes. There's
the curvature, the manifold, I presume.
We'll actually talk about that a little bit later, when I talk about calculating the dimension of spacetime. Okay, so again, this is the number of eigenvalues before the UV cutoff. Okay, so what this formula tells us is that we can express a gravity action as some constant times n, where n is the number of eigenvalues, and this constant is just, to match it to the standard gravitational action, is just this. Okay, and so you can think of this gravitational action as being expressed in the eigenbasis of the Laplacian operator. But we can also express it basis independently. The way we do that is we just say this n is the trace of the identity operator on the Hilbert space. And the reason why we care about expressing the gravitational action basis independently, most of all, we want to sometimes have a geometric representation of spacetime, which includes knowing about the metric positions and so on. But we also want to go beyond geometry. And so sometimes we shouldn't know what position is. And therefore, we want to be able to express the action without knowing about the basis basis of position. So we want it basis independently.
Can you explain your traces coming from integrating out some meta field in a more full action?
I will add matter right now, so you'll see what happens. Okay, and just one thing to note for later, just the detail is that if you take this number n and the volume is some constant. This density is some constant lambda squared divided plus corrections in higher order corrections in curvature. So that will be important later. Okay, so now matter. We are going to add to our path integral three bosons. Three bosons, and the way we add them is just through the Klein-Gordon action, but I will express it in a different way than usual.
So sorry, why is this last equation? I mean, why does the integral over R vanish?
Sorry?
Why does the integral over R vanish? It's order R squared.
Oh yeah, it's already R, sorry. Yeah, it's corrections in curve. Okay, so we will add not just one free boson, but NB boson species. So here we have the Klein-Gordon operator. If we took this trace in the basis position, then we would get the usual representation of the Klein-Gordon operator. But again, we want it independent of the position basis, so we rewrite it in a different way. And what will be useful for the path integral that we are going to perform later is to express it in the basis of the eigenvalues, in the eigenbasis of the Laplacian, basically. Okay, and similarly, we rewrite the action for free fermions in an analogous way. So we have a different number of fermions in general from number of bosons. This is NF, this is NB. Okay. And so that's, so now we have a gravitational action. We have the action for free bosons and the action for free fermions. And now we are ready to put all of that into a path integral. So the total action is just okay, so we are working in the Euclidean signature. And this is how we construct the path integral. So we sum over,
the mass, of the fields are in the lambda, is that it? Personally.
Yes.
So that's hidden.
Yeah. So some of us, you can have different kind of mass spectra. At first, I will talk about when all the particles have the same masses, but then we can also introduce different masses, and then we get the energy-dependent dimension. Okay, we'll see that.
The fields are, that's Laplacian and mass, right? So there are two kind of operators.
Yeah, yeah.
Lambda is...
the mass is hidden in the lambda, yeah.
So you shift, mm-hmm. kind of a shift of the lambda of the Laplacian, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's hidden inside. Okay, so the way we construct the path integral is we sum over all the possible eigenvalues of the Laplacian. So depending on what's the mass, so let's say the mass squared to the cutoff, depending on what's the mass, what's the cutoff. But not only do we sum over all possible eigenvalues of the Laplacian, we also sum over all possible numbers of the eigenvalues of the Laplacian. So I'll explain what that means. So the Laplacian, which acts on a smaller manifold with a certain cutoff, has less eigenvalues than a Laplacian that acts on a bigger manifold with the same cutoff. So we are trying to sum over all possible manifolds or capture as many as possible. So we are summing over all possible numbers of eigenvalues, not just over all possible values of the eigenvalues. So that's a little bit strange. It's like that's summing over the dimensions of Hilbert spaces.
Yeah, is there any statement between kind of one-to-one mapping between the spectrum of Laplacian and geometry? In other words, yeah, knowing kind of geometry, I can do the spectrum of Laplacian, but yeah, can I do other way around?
Yeah.
No, there's contact samples in 2D.
There are contact samples.
Yeah, yeah, Benin.
Yeah.
Can you hear the shape of a drum?
Yeah, and you can.
And that's right.
No. So yeah, that's the standard problem. You need more information than just the spectrum. And the intuitive explanation for that is that the spectrum doesn't define an operator. You also need to know the eigenbasis.
Yes. Is it also true for Dirac operator?
I think it's true still for the Dirac operator as long as you just have the spectrum. But if you have interactions, if you have any other information, then you can hope to reconstruct the full operator. Okay, but so this is spectral geometry inspired. Okay, so we sum over the eigenvalues, but then we also have to sum over all the eigenvectors, and the same for the fermions. I'm just shortcutting it, and that's where the action goes. So it's a Euclidean signature, so we have something like a temperature instead of the Lorentzian signature. And finally, we have some normalizations, which if you're interested, we can talk about that, but that's not so important. Okay, and the interesting thing about this path integral is that it's simple to calculate. So it turns out to be simple to calculate, you can just evaluate it. So
here you have a similar question.
Sorry?
Here you have a similar question. Uh-huh. Does each one of these configurations correspond to exactly one geometry, or are there actually constraints?
Yes, and it's not. It's probably not that. So the thing is that not every configuration of eigenvalues will correspond even to a manifold. So that's, we are going beyond geometry. That's like trying to step into going beyond geometry. That's one of the ideas of this work.
Yeah, but this even kind of, because you integrate over choices of eigenbasis, and then I can imagine you can do unitary transformations.
Yes.
If you have degeneracy, you can rotate inside Z, and that should possibly count as equivalent configurations and not just as one configuration.
That's a touchy topic. Maybe we should put that for the last part.
Okay.
We've considered that, all of that. Okay, so let's just evaluate this integral so that we can calculate some observables. And it's a big expression, but these are the important details. So this is some kind of a function of temperature and number of fermions and bosons. Kappa is a constant. Now, C is important, of course, for evaluating the integral. It's proportional to up to some constants. With this beta max. Okay, so the main point is that you can evaluate the path integral and then calculate some observables.
So sorry, it's the same C?
Yeah.
Is it the same C?
So yeah.
That is C exponential kappa C.
Yeah. Well, that comes from, you can think of this that there's a lot of Gaussian integrals here, but not just Gaussian integrals, there's also a sum over the Gaussian integrals with this prefactor, so you get C exponential of C.
Okay.
This factor comes from the normalization. But anyway, it's not hard to calculate. Okay, so first result that I promised, dimension.
So where are you counting this formulation?
Right, originally I understand where it was. Yeah, in this partition function, how do you get mu? Where is it?
6p divided by lambda.
But there is no lambda in this. Oh, upper lambda.
It's
okay,
it's
yeah, yeah, it's in lambda. Okay, I see. Okay.
Okay. So how do we calculate the dimension? What we use for that, the Weyl scaling formula. Weyl scaling formula, which works, you know, even in quantum mechanics, tells us that the behavior of density of eigenvalues as the eigenvalues go to infinity, or so large numbers, has to do with the dimension of space that the system is in. So this is the dimension, d. And so in order to use this formula, we had to find the density of eigenvalues that the path integral produces. Just a note here, so some people ask me, is there a weight on eigenvalues here? So we didn't use any weight. We said that all eigenvalues are equally probable, and that's a choice based on highest entropy choice. We don't know anything about it. We're trying to calculate something from first principles, so we use a flat distribution. But then, what does that flat distribution produce when we actually perform the path integral? And then we get, for this dimension here, we get that it depends on number of bosons that we put in and the number of fermions. So the effective dimension of spacetime that we calculate from that path integral is increased if we add more bosons and decreased if we add more fermions. And this is why initially I said that the dimension of space-time depends on boson pull and fermion push.
So does it work?
Does it work? Yes, that's a classic question. How do I get the other one? Marcus calculated that if he takes the first family of the standard model, he gets 4. But we don't take that seriously because there's no interactions in this model. Oh, thank you. Thank you. What's going to happen? Okay, so that's the first. That's the first result, and that's the result we get when we have a trivial spectrum, meaning that all particles have the same mass.
I think I'm a bit confused by the logic. So to arrive at the result on the right-hand side, did you use the action with d equals 4?
Yes. Okay, that's a good question. So if you look at Hawking's paper, Hawking is interested in 4 dimensions. So Hawking writes down the formula with 4 dimensions. If you look then deeper into Gilkey's paper, Gilkey does calculations for d-dimensional spacetimes. Okay, so the details of this action will be different for different dimensions. But what we say is this is the leading order, and what we are interested in is this. So we are saying this is the action for gravity. Okay. And then we use that. That's the possibly the more general thing. So we use that in the pattern theory.
So these bosons are scalars, right? So, or maybe vectors?
Bosons are scalars, and you can even say that the fermions are also just Grassmannian numbers.
But what about vector bosons or gauge bosons? Can they be incorporated in here?
That's just a technical detail. You can add it. This was just a preliminary study. Okay, and as I said, if you have a non-trivial mass spectrum, then you can have a dependence of the dimension of space-time.
So sorry.
Yes.
So this equation comes from the from an equation of motion for the partition function.
So the way you get this, you mean the effective dimension?
The effective dimension. Yeah.
Okay. The way you get it is you need to find the density of eigenvalues. The way you get the density of eigenvalues
for the Laplacian.
Of the eigenvalues of the Laplacian is instead of integrating over all the eigenvalues, you leave one out. And then the rest of the path integral creates the density for that one. And then you get rho of lambda. So you get
expectation value. Yeah. I mean, you compute the expectation value for the density of expectation values.
You basically just get the density of eigenvalue.
Yeah, but this is something I could just compute by looking at my manifold without any matter. But I think what you're doing is to compute the expectation value of this quantity in your path integral.
Okay, yeah, you can say it like that.
Because otherwise you don't get a dependence on the matter.
Absolutely. You're doing the integral, so you're just leaving out one of the lambdas. You're integrating over everything else. So in some sense, you're integrating over matter and gravity and so on, but you're leaving one eigenvalue free so you can calculate the density. And then you just use the Weyl's formula. And so as an example of how the effective dimension can vary. So this will be a plot of how the effective dimension varies with the energy at which you're probing it. In our paper, we have an example where, depending on which mass spectrum you choose and how many species that you have of bosons and fermions, you can have something like this. Okay. So you can have something like this, like you get number 4 and number 2 if you choose the right numbers of bosons and fermions. That's the whole logic. But what's interesting about this example is an example where at lower energies you are seeing a 4-dimensional manifold, and then it transitions into a 2-dimensional manifold, which has been seen in various different quantum gravity approaches. So I'm not saying this is a result of this paper. The result of this paper is that we can see a varying dimensional space-time, and one of the examples can be this one.
So to get this lambda-dependent effective dimension, you assume that this formula is Weyl-scaling holds also.
Yes. So
this limit.
Yeah, that's a good question. I should have mentioned that. So then we don't use the Weyl's formula in this trivial way. We use it. So the way you calculate this kind of dependency is, let's get this wrong. You say that the effective dimension is d 1 plus 2. So you're basically, you look at the behavior of lambdas in some regime. You find that this is how the density scales. You find that here the dimension is 2. Then here you look at how do the lambdas scale. You find that the effective dimension is 4. So that's how the formula works outside of the trivial mass spectrum. Okay.
You have a bumper like in a transition. So why this transition has this shape and which energy it is? Sorry.
Well, this is probably the energy at which a new particle comes into play. So you discover a new particle because you're probing high enough energies. That's what's happening physically. The reason why the dimension is not integer here, so it jumps out of integer, is that you don't have a nice 4-dimensional manifold representation here. You maybe have a highly a manifold with a lot of curvature, or even something that jumps out of that representation. Yes.
What does it mean for space-time to emerge if there's not an integer dimension?
Sorry, what does it mean for space-time?
There's a model for emergence of space-time from fluctuations, but if you don't have an integer dimension, what is the emergence of space-time?
Yes, okay, so you can imagine that if you keep probing larger and larger energies, that you suddenly discover that the dimension goes to 0 or negative, something weird. And there, in that case, you would say that you don't have a space-time representation of, you don't have a, sorry, geometric nice geometric representation of space-time. Now I'm calling space-time, I'm being very liberal with the term space-time, I'm calling that, I think you will understand, I'm calling that the representation of correlations that are present in universe, something like that. Yes.
Emergence of space-time, if it's a result, is an important result.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand where that result happens.
Right. So imagine going to Planck scale, and you discover that this effective dimension of space-time drops to 0 or something negative, something nonsensical. But as you probe lower energies, you start discovering geometric representation of space-time. So that's the idea, is that you can have, in some regimes, something that's geometric, and in some regimes, something that's not geometric.
So this result, you say, is if you put those masses like the standard model, did you probe how much it depends when you change the matter content?
We didn't do that yet. That's in the outlook. There isn't. I mean, it's a question of if it makes sense to put in masses as the standard model if you don't have interactions like in the standard model. So we didn't do that.
So what is the lambda for the standard model matter content? You said, and because you said also that it indicates that a new particle shows up. So is it like standard model scale? So TeV scales, or so not really a Planck scale?
So this model is generic. You can put in whatever you want.
Yeah.
So if you're asking where I would get the
yeah.
switch.
Yeah. So if I put in the standard model masses as like you did for this plot, so where would the jump from 4 to 2 dimensions happen?
Okay. Okay, I'm going to hedge this a lot. So if it's true that if you put in the numbers for the standard model first generation, that you get dimension spacetime 4. Okay, so this is where you live. But then you discover new particles, and you discover that there's more fermions than bosons for some reason at high energies, then you see all of a sudden the drop to 2 dimensions. So you, at some energy, I don't know, in CERN where they would discover it, then you would see a drop to smaller dimensions.
Okay, so the drop already assumes beyond standard model, like some additional particles.
Yes, but in all of those assumptions, but those assumptions are not so, shouldn't be taken so seriously because this is a model without interactions. So it's kind of just like a rough toy model for the standard model.
But to get the jump to be around the Planck scale, to say something that it's maybe related to quantum gravity, then the mass of the new particles would have to be around the Planck scale, or what is the relation of the mass?
Yeah.
Okay.
The mass of new particles is very much related to this.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really see how it can work for a standard model, frankly, anywhere, right? Because even at low energies, when we have only like first generation, we still have massless neutrinos, but only one photon, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are more fermions always.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, just to make it clear. So.
Okay.
Right.
You can even get, I mean, I think it's not also kind of useful applying that formula at so low energies. I mean, you really have to go to high energies. I mean, at large lambda, and then we will ask what is content there. Okay, it won't work for standard models, so it would mean that you need some completion.
Right.
Because you probably won't get negative G effect, if I believe, from this formula with standard model. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what's the meaning of having a new particle popping up like that? I mean, typically, like the Higgs is among us, even though we didn't observe it, it was among us, right? It's not that we observe it and it appeared because we know it. It just so how do we? What's the meaning of? You see, this is not really changing. So I don't. It's my question.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. I think that intuition comes from interacting fields, but what we have here are free fields. So. As far as I understand, in order to see them, you really need to probe large enough energies. Right? The effect of Higgs may be seen indirectly at lower energies, but if it was a free field, then it's a bit different.
So, but this graph comes from where? Which matter? What kind of matter content do you put in?
What kind of matter content is here? It's just free fermions and free bosons.
Okay, and you choose the masses somehow.
Yes. Yeah. So this is a very free model. You can put in whatever you want. So that's why I didn't mark this. This energy, because it doesn't matter. It's just some energy at which a new particle comes into play.
What's the number you took from the standard model?
This.
For this graph.
I mean, I didn't even write what's the dimension, so it doesn't matter. It's just an example that it's possible if you have a non-trivial mass spectrum that you have a varying dimensional spacetime. That was the
No way. Standard model.
Yeah.
Okay.
This graph
probably would have negative effective dimension.
Yeah.
Okay, so I learned just finish seeing the main results. So
Barbara, you can also have increasing dimension, right? In UV, am I right? I mean, then
yes.
The decrease can increase as well.
Yes, if you want the dimension to increase, then you have to add more bosons. So, okay, another thing that we can calculate is the expected number of the Hilbert space dimensions of the Laplacian operator, or whatever is the equivalent of the Laplacian operator when you don't have geometry. So, we can calculate that, and then. We can also calculate the volume, the expected volume of the space-time. Again, how do you calculate the volume? Instead of just finding the density of eigenvalues, you find what's the expected gap between the lowest eigenvalue and the first excited eigenvalue. And that's related to the volume of space-time.
Sorry, I'm confused. What do you call volume? I mean, like, what do you mean if you take a space-time which is, I don't know, like asymptotically flat is infinite? Sorry, I'm
Ah, okay, so actually I should have mentioned that earlier, is that the Hawking-Hilke formula is for compact spacelines.
So with the boundary, not with finite. I'm processing the
information. It's a new concept.
Finite volume.
A sphere.
Something that doesn't have a bound.
The portion of EDS, for example, like
it's a cylinder. It's Riemannian.
It's called Riemannian, and it's a sphere.
Yeah.
Okay.
we talk.
Or four tools.
Yeah.
Okay. So, it's also a good question. What is the volume here? But actually, we just interpret something as volume, and what we interpret as volume is the gap between the lowest eigenvalue and the second one. So that's the only measure that we can find in this model. But the reason why that's interesting, so maybe we can call this expected volume, if you're not upset about that. Yeah, okay. It's just a name. Okay, and what's interesting about this is if you look at the behavior of N and V, is they have the same behavior to up to a constant. So I don't have to write two plots for them. And this is going to be on a logarithmic scale. And when you look at their behavior as you change the temperature, this is roughly what it looks like. Sorry if I butcher this plot. I can show it later. I can show it later on the laptop. Okay, and there's two different kinds of behavior. This is interesting. So when the number of fermions is larger than 2 plus number of bosons, the universe increases in size as you increase the temperature and then starts decreasing in size to some finite size.
Could you just save as a temperature comes from?
Sorry?
Where does the temperature come from?
So temperature is a parameter in this model.
Beta.
Yeah. And then there's a different kind of behavior when there's more bosons than fermions minus 2. In this case, it just kind of keeps increasing. Log n with respect to temperature. So it doesn't matter. Okay, so the explanation of why having too many fermions in the model eventually starts decreasing the size of the universe is not so easy to explain. It's related to this fact that when you calculate the effective dimension, the bosons increase it and fermions decrease it.
Yeah. So what does this volume of, the growth of volume with temperature, what does it mean? I mean, the one we get for a large number of bosons. What does it mean physically? Bigger temperature, bigger volume.
Okay, just a sec. Sorry, I didn't hear your question. I was all the time thinking what's wrong with the thing that I wrote down. And actually, I've been saying it the opposite way all the time, and this is the more logical result. Sorry about that. So. Okay, this makes more sense. Fermions push the universe out. Fermions push it out just like the neutron star, and bosons pull it in. I messed up. I'm really sorry about that. And that's kind of intuiting. That's why I said boson pull and fermion push initially. Sorry about that. Okay. Sorry, yeah. I guess all of the things that we discussed about standard model doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you interpret this dependence on temperature on the volume?
How do I explain this?
Yeah, what does it mean? No, even what's the interpretation of that? Because with bigger temperature, we'd get bigger volume.
This is a very strange result. So if you try to use our intuition from condensed matter, it doesn't really work that easily. And we've done various small calculations to get more intuition, and there's not something that I can really easily tell you. It's just that fermions and bosons contribute different to entropy, and it ends up working out like this. That's the best that I can do. The result that's more intuitive is this result about the effective dimension, where, you know, just like in the neutron star, fermions increase the volume of it and decrease, and bosons decrease it. It turns out that in space-time, fermions increase the dimension of space-time because they want to be as much apart from each other as possible, and bosons pull it in. That's the more intuitive.
The temperatures there. In gravity, we usually identify temperature with a with a periodicity and time. Whereas here, it looks just like a coupling constant, an overall coupling constant for the action. So maybe the best thing I can compare it with is actually G Newton for some, which you can still choose to be something. And this is, if it's beta 1 over T, so yeah, if you increase G Newton, I don't know, you get smaller universes if your number of fermions is large. Does that make sense? If the gravitational interaction gets stronger.
But that's again a temperature dependent or coupling constant dependent.
Yeah, and then it's actually not very clear if what happens if you also rescale the matter part. Maybe that doesn't do much.
Okay, so let me just finish with this consistency check. So now we've calculated and shown the behavior of the expected number of eigenvalues and the volume, and now we can compare back to Hawking-Gilkey formula. So Hawking-Gilkey formula told us that up to curvature corrections, there is some lambda-dependent constant. So the density of eigenvalues, and density is just the number divided by volume. So Hawking-Gilkey told us that it's a constant density plus curvature corrections. Okay, and here, after we do the path integral, so the quantum, the expected value of the quantum calculation, again, tells us that this is some kind of a constant up to some corrections. Now, I cannot call these corrections in general just curvature because we are going also beyond geometry, but we can see this clearly in the fact that I didn't have to write two separate plus for n and b. They are pretty much the same up to some constant. And I should have said these two different curves are just different curves for different choices of NF and NB. So they are not two different curves for N and V. So just think of N and V are the same curve here. So this is NF and B, and this is NF prime and B prime, and the same thing here. And N and V are the same. Okay, so that's the consistency check. So what's interesting about that is that Hawking-Gilkey formula is a formula about something that's geometric, and it states this property of density of eigenvalues. And then you take something that's geometric and put it in a path integral with a lot of things that are not geometric, that don't have a geometric representation. But in the expected value, you still get that the density is constant up to some corrections.
When you say constant, means constant as a function of temperature, right? But
yes.
Constant, it should depend on mu, shouldn't it? Because, yeah, there is this lambda square, so it should be mu square.
The statement is about the constant as a function of temperature.
But is it proportional to mu square? I mean, this ratio.
This ratio, mu squared. So you mean, let's go back.
Or 1 over mu squared, yeah, I don't remember. But lambda was related, right?
I didn't write the exact expressions. So. Let me just think about it. I didn't consider this question. Can we come back at the end?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, actually, that's the whole message. I can just summarize the main messages. So maybe the ones that I've promised in the beginning. So what we did here is we wrote down a mathematical model where we can calculate the dimension, effective dimension, and expected volume of emergent spacetimes, and we find that they depend on gravity, both on pull and Fermion push. We find that if we introduce a mass spectrum, a non-trivial mass spectrum, meaning that not all the particles have the same mass, we can get an energy-dependent space-time dimension. And then, as I said now at the end, we did this consistency check where we found that the density of eigenvalues for the classical calculation is constant, and then the density is a constant also in the quantum calculation, which can be thought of as some sort of a renormalization of that parameter, maybe in the quantum theory. So that we consider that to be a consistency check, which worked out. Okay. So for the follow-up work, I think some people have already asked. So we would like to introduce interactions so that we can have something more similar to the standard model. But what would also be interesting, instead of just putting in standard model by hand, it would be interesting to sum over possible numbers of bosons and summing over possible numbers of fermions, and then getting out of the path integral the expected value of number of bosons, expected value of number of fermions, and seeing how that matches with the standard model and calculations like that. It would be also interesting to do a sum over possible spectra and see what's the expected value of mass spectra. And so that's left to follow-up work. Okay, that's it.
Maybe it's a trivial question, but when I'm thinking standard model, I'm thinking that it's living in non-compact space.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it mean when you put standard model on the sphere? Maybe it's obvious, but I never thought about it. Why should we give the same answer as standard model?
Right, okay, that's a good question.
Maybe the same, maybe locally you can, I don't know.
Okay, you're saying that even if we do this kind of calculation, it would be hard to interpret.
Maybe you can take the limit after. I mean, like, maybe the dimension computation still makes sense, but maybe not the volume. I don't know. It's just because you should take the limit of kind. Oh, maybe not.
The spectrum would become continuous. So here the spectrum is discrete.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you start to go non-compact, spectrum becomes.
Okay.
Let's start from. Complication.
Yes. Well, first thing that you would just
in counting, having and defining what n is.
Yeah. So n would become a continuous variable. Instead of sum, you would have to do an integral, and there would probably be various complications.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is a theorem by Alan Cole which says that you can reconstruct
mm-hmm.
Riemannian data from Riemannian geometry from this spectral data, and I think that only works for discrete spectrum. And for compact, so maybe that's why. I don't know if it's not true for non-compact, if it's proven or not.
It's not proven.
Yeah, so it still can be true.
It could be. That's the hope of Kahn.
Yeah.
Can the effective dimension be negative?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That means that you don't have a nice geometric representation of space-time. So then it's not a manifold. Then it's something else.
In the plot of d effective versus lambda, you see like at different values of lambda, the effective can change. Does that effect ever have any role to play in the graphs on the right? So at higher temperatures, maybe some more boson species become relevant and shift you between the two regimes.
Okay, that's true. Okay, that's a good question. So this plot was these plots were done for trivial spectra. Then if you start seeing, you can effectively model that by seeing different fermion and boson species coming into play. So that would change these graphs.
So you'd go from one to the other and
then
back maybe.
Yeah, something like that.
So yeah, how large the volume can be here? Yeah, well, or maybe more physical question here. Well, we started from gravity where you have lambda, which is cut off, and this lambda actually is a cosmological constant at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was a very large one. Then you had matter, and does it happen that, yeah, can you get the volume which is much bigger than the one which would be set by this cosmological constant? I mean, volume much bigger than the cutoff scale, in other words, which would mean that there is some cancellation of cosmological constant between the bare one and the one induced by matter.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I don't know. I will have to check the plot. So here I didn't put in, you know, the numbers because I thought it just to show the behavior. That's a good question. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I can check later and I can tell. So it's similar to this. You mean does it go to a constant?
Yeah, rather than zero.
So the way I was thinking about this is that I don't take it seriously above some temperature. So I didn't look, at the asymptotic behavior. So it goes to. Here it goes to some finite constant, but yeah. These are graphs that were done numerically.
Suppose you want to impose that the effective dimension is 4.
Right.
Then what would happen? That's mainly the question in reverse. Does it happen that that's a very specific fine tuned value?
Right. That's a good question. You mean these numbers that go to some specific value? Again, maybe that's it, because this is temperature dependent.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not so. Yeah.
So when you don't have matter, you can if I give you the eigenvalues of adaptation, you can reconstruct some geometry,
mm-hmm.
some classes of geometry, isospectral geometries.
Right.
But then if I put also matter, can you reconstruct both geometry and matter? Because here that's what you're putting everything in the same
in the same
bin, right?
Right.
Can you from this bin of eigenvalues really reconstruct matter and geometry?
Yeah, because the eigenvalue is the eigenvalue of the Klein-Gödel and Dirac operator. Is that the question? Maybe
yeah,
I don't understand.
Kind of. So you have both matter, you can reconstruct.
They are together. Yeah.
And is that meaningful then to say that this is a dimensional space-time? Because that's why you put everything together, no? I mean, shouldn't you just focus on the two or something like that for talking about the dimension of the geometry? Because this is kind of related to matter, right? So.
Well, the idea is that we don't know if that's true, but the idea is that the geometry, I mean, the space-time and matter interact. And at some point you would like to have a theory in which it encompasses both of them at the same time. This is an attempt at that because, as you said, the eigenvalues and the eigenvectors, they capture the information about this manifold, but they also capture the information about the matter at the same time. So I think, we don't know, but there is not one without the other. So I think it is meaningful to say that the effective dimension depends not just on space-time, but also matter content.
Yeah, so matter comes from the eigenvectors, because typically I just, in like Geek case and stuff, code, it's always mostly about the eigenvalues, but here you say eigenvalues and eigenvector, and
yes.
So matter is from the eigenvectors. That's kind of what you're saying.
I would say, okay, you were saying eigenvectors are specific to matter,
yeah.
But the eigenvalues are something that they share, the matter and gravity share.
I was wondering whether I tried to compare the regularization that you have here to some other methods of computing functional traces, for example, because it would give you a feeling whether you can really do this integral of the eigenvalues. Because essentially what should be written there is a trace log formula from integrating out the matter fields. And this trace can be regulated by different
methods. So I think mm-hmm. what you just did here is just to assume you have diagonalized.
Assume what, sorry?
That you have diagonalized operator, or it's just diagonal from the very mm-hmm. beginning, so that you can integrate. But maybe you can
yes.
add other regularization schemes to compare what you get in this case.
Right. Okay. I think Hawking discusses some of that in that paper, 1978 paper. But yeah, this is a question that I've got from people. Like, why would I trust this way to write down the path integral? Because yeah, some of the like, why would we add all of these eigenvalues to the path integral? And so on? What does it even mean? And the only kind of justification is post hoc. Is that the right expression? Where you get this kind of a good consistency check. And yeah. So, but yeah, okay, if there's an independent way to check, if that makes sense, then please send it to me.
And putting interactions would break the fact that it's diagonalizable so easy, right? That's what the issue is with interactions. That it's not going to be so easy. The eigenvalues are going to be the eigenspace and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Complicated, right? That's a difficulty, is it?
I don't know. What did you mean by that?
What I was meaning was that when you integrate up metafields and a gravity metapath integral, you get a trace log formula
mm-hmm.
Where the operator is just a kinetic operator for this field.
Yes.
And this trace can be computed by different methods. It very much depends on whether it's actually even not clear whether you can compute it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But suppose you can do it, there are different schemes, I think Alessio will also know much more about it, SETA regularization and so on. So it would be interesting to see whether such a computation coincides with just integrating all the data.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. In some sense, I mean, Hawking could have done this calculation in 1978, I suppose, but he didn't. And maybe, you know, and he probably was worried about these details that you're mentioning. And he discusses them in the paper. But what's interesting is if you just if you make this kind of leap of faith and you say, well, we'll integrate over all lambdas, and this is how we make a step into kind of non-geometric representations of space-time, and then we see what we get out of that, then we get these results. And so that's interesting, and we'll see what next. That's the idea.
All right, very good. So let's thank Barbara again.